Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks to Good Chop for supporting The Morning Stream. Go to goodchop.com/morningstream120 and use the code MORNINGSTREAM120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. TMS is brought to you daily by the support of our patrons at patreon.com/TMS, like Fromup, TWP Minus, and Kyle Brigman. Coming up on TMS, glimpse of his Ruffalo.
Crying over spilt Loudermilk.
Owing it all to Wilson.
Smell mead every day.
Faking authenticity.
Thanks for the burp bubble.
Scott's desert problem.
Daywalking podcasters.
Throwing seven in the snow.
Godzilla 0 point.
Are you racist or what's your problem?
The Owen Wilson influence.
Talking about bees with Bobby and more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
Checkmate.
Damn, I lost again.
Ever since we were kids. You've always run out of steam in the closing stretch. And that is why Jenny left you.
Shit.
The Morning Stream. What could a young cop like you want with an old fossil like me?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to TMS. It's The Morning Stream for Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm Scott Johnson. And right here with me right now is Bobby Frankenberger, who's sitting in for Brian Ibbett. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. I was listening. Every once in a while when I'm on the show, I hear you do the intro, and it just feels like I'm just listening to the show, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really expected you to say, and there's Brian Ibbett.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost did. I'll be honest. I felt it creeping up into my vernacular as I was talking. I felt the habit, you know?
But you said that, and I was like, I'm on the show. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. You're here with us. You're not just listening today. Right. You're saying to yourselves, well, where's Brian Ibbett? He had a short story out of a long one over the weekend. He told me, he says, hey, I got to pick up my mom from the airport. She's back from her cruise. It'll be on Sunday night at midnight and it should be fine. I'm planning on a show. I'm just letting you know in case something goes long. I'm saying, no problem. All good. Last night, Oscars are over. He sends me a text and just says, here's, we got a problem. She's not getting into like 2 or 2:30. Now, for some reason, a two and a half hour delay from the airline. And I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. And so we mutually decided, yeah, you don't want to be, you don't need to be here. We can, you know, Bobby's available. We can do something. We'll figure it out. So yeah. It all worked out. I hope he is getting some rest. Brian's an early bird, though. He's not one to sleep in. So my guess is he's just up and annoyed that he can't get extra sleep. That's what I'm thinking right now. I could be wrong. He'll tell me. But If I know Brian and his early bird tendencies, he also can stay out late. This is a guy here. Let me just say something that irritates me about Brian. And I wish I had this superpower. I just don't have it. I am definitely a night person. I like nights. And back in the day, I could stay up all night. No problem. Mm-hmm. But even when I had a solid 8 hours, 9 hours of sleep, even as a teenager or whatever, morning's just the worst, just absolutely the worst. And you say, well, Scott, why did you make a freaking morning show? What were you thinking? Well, the reason it's at 9 is because it isn't at 8 or 7. All right.
Right. So, it used to be earlier.
It used to be when we started, this thing was at 7 a.m.
I know.
My time. And that turned out to be, that was bad for everybody, but it was just like, why are we doing this? This is stupid. Let's put it a couple hours later. So we did. Yeah. But anyway, so I can't do both ends of that candle. Brian can do it. He can stay up all night and have fun and party hardy or whatever. And then next morning, up at the crack of dawn, feeding a dog or a cat, you know, first coffee down, look at the sunrise, like all that stuff. I'm not that. I can't do that. And I don't know very many people who can. So
what's your typical cycle on an everyday? When you go to bed, when you wake up?
So depends on the night, but if you asked me 20 years ago, the answer might be different, but probably 11:30 midnight, usually when I knock off.
Yeah.
And then 7 a.m. usually. Sometimes earlier, but usually no later than 7. I'm up and awake and moving around. When I had my day job and was doing Frog Pants on the side, it was up at 6, out the door by 7:30, into the office by 9 because of the commute.
Yeah.
So it was a very different time. But even then, I was staying up too late. Then I was podcasting at night. So that was a stupid idea. That was good for my mental health.
Podcasting is often a nighttime activity, especially if you and or your partners that you're working with are you know, day job people.
Yeah, day walkers.
That's what I deal with, right?
Yeah.
So I have to do all my podcasting at night. I'm the same. I like to go to bed around 11:30, but I get up at 5:30 every day to get the kids going for school and stuff like that.
So that's very early. That's good, though. Your daughters will appreciate that one day. They'll look back and say, "Dad," and you'll say, "What?" And they'll say, "Well, thanks for making us so on time all the time. And, you know, you've made us productive parts of society." And you'll say, "Who are you?" I don't know where I am. You'll say,
"That's how my mom was, on the weekend. If we were asleep past 9, she was yelling at us, telling us to get out of bed and do something." So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mine too. In that generation, there was a real look, because their parents were saying, when I was a kid, we had to go get a loaf of bread in some line that took 3 hours because of the stupid depression or the, you know, all that. Yeah, depression.
The stupid depression. That's the what
stupid.
They call it.
The, yeah, they don't call it the Great Depression anymore. It's a stupid depression. And then they tried to, you know, fill us in on that. They also did the whole, there's a kid in China starving, please eat your peas.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that. Now I'm really weird about food that gets wasted. I hate it. I hate it when food gets wasted. And I'm pretty sure it's because of that. I think I talked about this with Brian a little bit, but this happened again over the weekend. There were some chicken legs that Kim had made. She made a big batch of like baked chicken legs. And then you just use them over multiple days of leftovers of, here's lunch with the chicken leg and some kimchi and a nice little salad and whatever. And the next day, this time I'm putting some marinara on these chicken legs. Like, I could eat chicken legs for days, right? Mm. Good protein. They're not fried. It's good stuff. But Kim won't let anything go longer than like maybe 5 days at the top for like meat in the fridge. Mm. And I'm of the belief that you can go as long as it doesn't start smelling weird.
Yep. I'm a smeller. That's what it is.
Yeah. Smell for me every time. So I'm always around day 4, day 5 going, I got to eat that chicken. Got to eat that chicken. Because I just know she's going to take it and throw it in the freaking trash. And then I'm going to be annoyed because I want chicken. Right.
Yeah.
Well, this week happened this week. I went to go get this chicken. There ain't no chicken. And I said, "Where's the chicken?" And Kim goes, "It was already 5 days. I'm like, "Oh, honey.
What are you doing?"
I don't understand why her upbringing in Mississippi, why they were just throwing chicken away left and right. I don't get it.
Yeah, me and my sister grew up pretty poor, so I'm the same way. I just can't stand throwing food out. And so we just work it into our weekly. Stephanie is a meal planner. She plans out the meals for the week. She just works in leftovers days, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's when we do all that. So because I can't stand, I'm like, it looks like throwing money away to me every time we do it.
Yeah, because it is. It is. It may not be that much. Like, I probably lost $4 worth of chicken, maybe three. Like, who knows? It wasn't even that much. But I'm like, well, that's $3 worth of chicken I ain't going to ever see again. You know?
Yeah.
Even though I can go spend another $3 and get some more chicken. Plus, she bought
that on a Steam sale.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the other thing is it's very easy for me to go, that game's only 15. And she's over there going, I'm just going to throw out a little old chicken. And then somehow I think she's making a huge financial mistake and I'm not. You know, it's really dumb.
Right.
It's really dumb. Anyway, hey, speaking to the Oscars, they happened last night.
Ooh.
I don't know how big. I think your reaction is about what I expected. I don't know how. I don't know how into that event you are. Sounds like not much.
No, I don't. I've never been into the Oscars as much, very much. But I do think it's interesting when other people are like. I like hearing people talk about it, but I just can't. I can't do it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I can't watch it either. I see bits and pieces. I see a little clip here and there. I do like memes and things, so I'm on the lookout for those. But for the most part, the pomp and circumstance of it all is hard for me to watch. The little bit I did see, because I don't really have a good way to watch it either. That's the other problem. So I'm only watching clips because I don't have terrestrial TV. I don't have an antenna hooked up, and I don't have any way to do CBS stuff without paying for some, you know, YouTube TV trial or whatever. And I don't want to do it. So, cause I'm never going to use it other than that. I'm not going to lock myself into that, even if it's only for a month for one stupid event. So I just don't care. And I also will know what the results of the event are soon enough. Anyway, they're going to announce them and then a live blog is going to tell me, and then I'm going to go to bed knowing all the winners. Cause I do like movies. I like film, you know, whatever, but here's my problem. The clips I saw were like a couple of the times where they do the big ones. So best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, all those sorts of things. And they bring out, this year they did a weird thing. Instead of bringing out just last year's winner of that category, they brought out last year's winner of that category plus like four other people, or enough to name all the other contenders from previous years at some point or another. Sometimes a long time ago, like Sally Field was up there for actress. And she was the Emma Stone one, which is the one she got picked. But anyway, so they bring them all out. So you got her, you got Charlize Theron, you got another couple ladies. Can't remember any. Can't remember who all was there. For the dude, you had Tim Robbins, Nicolas Cage, Ben Kingsley, who picked the one. Or he didn't pick it, but that was the one he had. Yeah, had your Tarzan. It used to be Tarzan. What's his name from last year? Encino Man.
The guy from the Mummy movie.
Yep, that's the guy. He just won last year. I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway, that's someone in the chat will scream it. Yep.
Brendan Fraser,
geez. So he gets up. Anyway, they do this thing this year. Now, that's fine. I don't have a problem with like, oh, look at all these five, you know, highly respected actors with their various awards and everything. That's cool. That's fine.
Yeah.
But instead of just getting up and announcing the person, they keep doing this crowd work thing the whole night. Of the clips I saw, including some Jimmy Kimmel stuff, where they want to like call out people in the audience and have an interaction with them. So instead of just saying, well, Annette Bening is up for this movie and here's why she's awesome and everything, it's always like, okay, Annette, and she's like looking at her in the audience, you're up for a thing because you're so awesome. And then that person smiles and they cut back and forth. I hate that. That whole motif leaves me wanting to pee. I don't like
it. The reason I think that is bad, because I agree with you, there's this trend in like live hosted, you know, award shows and just things like that in general, where you're just trying to engage. And I think the reason they do it is because they're trying to show authenticity, or they're trying to manufacture authenticity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like, oh, it's just these people talking to each other. But first of all, they're not just people, all right?
Yeah.
They're on a stage at a huge, giant event, and they're all just very famous people.
They're all big deals. They probably got paid a bunch of money to stand there. Like, I don't know how that all works, but one would assume.
But it's not authentic, and it's obvious that it's not authentic because they're manufacturing it, and so I don't know. I agree with you. That kind of stuff.
So my radar just goes off, and I think, well, what happened? Just the good old, like, get up. You're a respected person. You know, let's say they do it like usual. It's Brendan Fraser. He talks about the great work this guy did. They show a quick clip of the thing that he did in Oppenheimer, and the other thing other guy did in his movie. And then you say, and the winner is, and you get the four or five screens. Like, to me, that's more of the thing. Instead of going, you know, standing up there and going,
Cillian Murphy, and looking right at him, and the audience going, and then you go, you know, you have been an inspiration. It's like, dude, we're not. Stop it. Cut it out. Right. Why are you? Why this format? It just felt so fake to me. Anyway, I only saw bits and pieces because Carter and her friend Alicia are like pirates, and they found. Was it a Twitch channel?
Yarg.
Carter, was it a Twitch channel you guys found this on? That's what it was. So this guy had an RNTP channel or something, his own IP, right? Mm-hmm. And on his Twitch channel, he was doing reaction crap, but he had a link down there to this exact place where he was streaming the whole thing. And he could do it because it wasn't on Twitch and it wasn't on YouTube, so he'd get away with it. So that's how these guys were watching it. I don't know what my point was with that. Oh, just the ingenuity of the young people today, you know?
Yeah. They know how to break the rules.
Right. So there's that. And then but then I am interested. Like, I'm interested in who wins what and what the competition looks like and who got snubbed in people's minds. And I don't care about all the catty stuff about that. It's more the competition of it. And also I really like movies. And this was a big year for movies. And there were a couple things I hadn't seen. So I'm watching it. We'll go over a couple of big names here in a second. But what it all inspired me to do was to finally sit down and start Poor Things last night, which was that movie by Yorgos Lanthimos with your Emma Stone and your Mark Ruffalo and your whatnot in there.
Yeah.
And I started watching that, and the first thing I saw was a hybrid dog goose. So it was a dog with a goose's head attached to it running around the foyer of somebody's house. And that was like, 30 seconds into this thing. And I went, what the frick have I gotten into? Let me just say, I'm not done yet because it was late. That movie is effed. It is. It is so weird. And by the way, so far, I think she deserves it. She's amazing in it.
Yeah.
But I'd seen all of his previous films. I'd seen The Lobster. I'd seen Killing of the Sacred Deer. I didn't see the one that was before this one, but most of his movies I've seen and consumed, and they're all very odd. This thing is next level odd, like odd times to the power of 10. It's very weird. Anyway, thanks for warning me, everybody. And if you've seen Poor Things, you'll know what I'm saying. Thanks for warning me about the burp bubble. All right, moving on. You don't want to know, Bobby. You don't want to know.
I'm looking at this list of movies of Best Pictures nominees. And it's made me realize that I don't watch movies anymore.
You don't really keep up with the big
stuff. I used to love movies, but, you know, I don't go to the movie theater anymore. I think things like Marvel and then, you know, like streaming series like Netflix and stuff like that have just taken over my viewing. And I need to watch more movies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No,
I have not seen any of these.
This is the problem, though. Like, Ibbot is a huge nut for this, right? He goes to all of them, tries to see everything before, including the shorts and the documentaries and documentary shorts and all that stuff. I don't, but I used to be a lot more with, like, whatever the top, you know, the five movies that were up for Best Picture, I would have seen them all. This year I'd seen, hold on, literally none of them yet. And that doesn't ever happen. Like, I almost always see at least two of these, but I haven't seen any of these. And then people are like, you haven't seen Oppenheimer? No, I will, but I haven't yet.
Like, I haven't seen it. And you'd think science lover Bobby might have seen Oppenheimer, but I just, like, where do I have time to go see a 3-hour movie?
I mean, the last thing I saw in theaters was Dune Part 2. That was a must. I was not going to miss that.
Yeah.
Prior to that, though.
Oh, I saw that this weekend. Holy cow.
Dude. Do yourself a favor now and go watch Part 1 again. Opens that up. Like, it's the perfect two-part thing. It's the perfect 6 hours of filmmaking.
It really is. I did because Stephanie watched it with, we went to the theater together, and she hadn't seen the first one, and so I rewatched it, and she saw it for the first time last weekend, and then we saw that one this weekend. And
it's cool, right? Like, you get more. I got way more out of Part 1 than I did the first time, and I've read the book since Part 1 came out, just to, you know, reiterate everything, and I still got more out of it. I'm telling you,
You guys are going to be so sick of me until, because when May comes and Furiosa hits, a whole different conversation. But until then, it's all I can think about. It's all I can draw. It's all I can, it's all I want to think about or talk about. I've been, I'm seeking out the, what are the best Brian Herbert books after his dad died? Which of the six should I read next of the mainline series? Because I've only read through Messiah before, or maybe Children of Dune. But anyway, I'm just like, consume. Some people are like, oh no, read Hyperion. It's totally inspired by Dune. Like, oh, okay, I'll read that book. And what video games am I in the mood for? Turns out stuff with big deserts in it and all that. I got a problem. Yeah. I got a real issue going. Dune Part 2 is rad.
It's a good problem to have. I the movie definitely made me... I'd never read the books either. But it's made me absolutely want to go read the books.
Oh, you should. They're great. At least, I mean, the first book is an all-time classic. Second book is weird. So I did read Children of Dune because I did read the third. And the third is less weird. But then things get really weird, apparently, in the final half of his sixology. What do you call six books?
What would you...
Other than six books. Like, you know, quintology is not right. What would it be?
You've got a hexagon is...
Hexology?
Is six-sided, so hexology.
Hexology. Hexonomy. Hex. Hex on your family. Anyway. The one of those is like 1,000 years in the future, and it's all about a half man, half worm. I think that's Heretics, or maybe it's God Emperor of Dune. I think that's it. I've never got to those, but things get very weird, and the movie's already weird. They went ahead and decided to do in this movie in part two what I already thought was the weirdest thing ever, and I still refuse to say because I don't want to spoil anything. But I couldn't believe they decided to do it. As soon as they started to do it, let's say it's a communication that happens. I went, oh, you're going there, are you? You're going to put that in your movie. And they did. Yeah. It's a freaking six-hour masterpiece. Oh, my gosh.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Anyway, I can't stop thinking about it. Let's move on. Oh, my point was the last two movies I saw were that, and then before that, Across the Spider-Verse. And before that, I don't remember, maybe pre-pandemic something. I just don't go to theaters anymore.
Yeah. I love going to the theater, too. I wish I could go more often, but...
Yeah, it's expensive, takes time. I don't know. What's your closest theater? We have one real close, but you have to go far.
It's like 15 minutes away. It's not far. It's just children, you know.
Yeah.
So movies don't start early enough in the day for me to go while the kids are at school. So
that's true. They start at what? They start at 10 our time, I think.
And I think there are some that start at 10, but not usually. It's usually like 12 around here.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be the only guy in there. That's no fun.
I don't care about that. I don't care about being the only person in
the theater. You're okay being the only guy? You're okay being a solo roller?
Okay. I remember when I was... I would never do this again today, but I remember I went and saw Powder in the movie theater.
Oh, my gosh. I have strong feelings about Powder. Continue.
But me and my friend were the only people there, and we just went down in front of the very front row, and we just laid on the ground.
Wow. And watched Powder, of all things.
Yeah.
That movie had... Lance Henriksen in it, I remember. And I love him, so that was enough for me. But I saw that movie, and that movie made me cry. And then it made me mad. And then it made me cry again.
How old were you when you saw it?
Oh, I was probably 20. I mean, you're what, 10 years younger than me or something like that? No, you just turned 40.
I just turned 40.
So you're like 14 years younger than me. And so you would have been a lot younger than me then. So I'd have been like 20, whatever year it came out. 20. It came out in the 90s, right? 20 something. Anyway, I see this thing. And it makes me cry like a baby. I then find out later the director's in trouble because he was like a registered sex offender or something like that. Mm. And nobody knew about it. And then I was mad. I was mad at that movie, even though, it's a piece of art by somebody who turns out had a real checkered past. And I was mad. And then I saw it on video again. And that also got me kind of emotional on video again. And then I was mad again because I was like, dang, you're not supposed to make me emotional. This thing from somebody who I'm supposed to be mad at and who shouldn't technically be out there making movies. This is all in my head at the time. And so now I have very complicated feelings about powder. And powder's kind of...
Had you already had...
Go ahead.
Any children by the time you saw that movie?
I would have had... Well, let's just see when that came out. Powder movie.
Drenched Wildfire says it came out in 95.
Oh, then I had a tiny, like, nine-month-old then.
And that could... So I found that I used to be like, you could never move me. I was an immovable, unemotional person until after I had a child. And then I can't watch. I was on the treadmill one time watching an episode of, I don't know, it was some comedy, and I started crying.
Yeah, it's weird, right? It changes you. I had this. I've talked about it 1,000 times, but the reason I threw the DVD of Seven in the snow,
yeah,
like literally took it out of the player, went upstairs, and chucked it into the snow outside. I was so angry at that movie because I had little ones or little one. I guess, because I think that was like same year. Maybe it was 97.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's right before Carter was born. And I just, this idea of, I don't, has it been long enough we can say what happens at the end of Seven? people know
spoiler
or they
alert.
Don't. Yeah, people know or they don't. A terrible, terrible truth is revealed at the end of Seven. Yeah. And that truth was just too tight and close when you're a father of a tiny baby. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I was so angry at that film. And it took me until maybe last year for me to see Seven again. I was that mad. And I really like that movie overall. And I think that...
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah. And I think What's-His-Beak's a great director. I can't think of names today. Something wrong with me. Anyway, that guy. And yeah, I still hold some real anger at that movie for what it did to me emotionally then.
Yep.
Well done, everyone involved.
I cry all the time at everything now that I watch. I cried, you know, Brian, speaking of Brian Ibbett, he recently recommended that Netflix series Louder Milk. I cried watching an episode of Louder Milk last night.
Dude, that show has heart in ways you don't expect.
It does.
It's very good. Yeah. Glad you're watching him, Louder Milk. Louder Milk's awesome. Milk. Look at me. I made a recommendation on a Wednesday. Brian started watching it. You started watching it.
Oh, so that was your.
That was me. Okay. Yeah. Look at me spreading the Louder Milk.
Yeah, that's a good show. Good show.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Anyway, we have some winners. I'm just going to rip through these. Christopher Nolan won for Best Director for the film Oppenheimer. Yeah. He also
no H at the beginning of
no. There's no H in there at all. He won that for directing. Also, it won Best Picture. I don't think that was a huge surprise. My surprise here is that they didn't give Scorsese director as sort of a, I don't know, a olive leaf to a guy who's probably not going to make any more movies, or if he is, it's one or two. Anyway, whatever. That's what happened there. Emma Stone for Poor Things. After seeing half of that thing, I'm pretty sure that was the right call. Again, I haven't seen the rest of these. I'm sure they're all amazing. I really like that Lily Gladstone deal. I haven't seen the movie, but I just like her a lot. And I kind of was pulling for her just from a like sort of non-Hollywood. I mean, she was an actress before this, but, you know, somebody who's not your normal. It's not Emma Stone. It's not, you know, Sandra Bullock for the 15th time or whatever. It's somebody we don't really know about. And it comes from a really interesting background. And I was hoping for that. But Emma Stone is kind of blowing my mind in this other thing. Yeah. Let's see. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. I hope this doesn't change their plans. They're getting all back together for a new 28 days later follow up, 28 years later or something.
Yeah, I heard that as well.
I hope he's involved, but maybe his price went up last night. So good luck to everyone trying to hire Cillian Murphy. There's rumors he's going to be the next James Bond because of the popularity. I don't know if I can see it. Maybe I can. Acting wise, no problem. It's just that he's like this kind of wiry weirdo, you know, and I don't know how to feel about that yet. Well, the time will tell. Best original song went to the person who should get it, which is Billie Eilish for her What Was I Made For song. I really genuinely really think that song is amazing. I love that song. Mm-hmm. I don't even care that much about Barbie. Like I could see it again. It's fine. Like I know it's culturally big deal. Everybody Yahoo, and it's fine. I liked it. I saw it in theaters. Oh, I guess I saw that before The Last Spider-Man. Anyway, the point is that song, though, transcends it all for me. It's utterly fantastic. Let's see here. Best original score, Oppenheimer. And that wasn't even Hans Zimmer. It was some other dude. He was busy doing Dune stuff. Don't worry, next year is your year, Hans Zimmer. Best sound, Zone of Interest. Oh, best special effects went to the Godzilla deal. 0 point. What's it called?
Shit.
Hold on. Godzilla minus one. 0 point.
It had something to do with numbers and math.
Yep. Let's see. Best live action went to The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. And here's what's great about that. So it's the first time Wes Anderson's won an Oscar. He's not there to get it. They do it. They give it to him, you know, but not posthumously. It's that's when you're dead. But what do you call it when they're not there? Absentia, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So they say, oh, I couldn't be here, but we're happy to accept on his behalf, blah, blah, blah. And he walks away. Later on, they interview the, or somebody talks to him and says, hey, this is your first Oscar. How do you feel about this? And his quote was so good. And I'll paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me. But he said, I would not have an Oscar at all or ever been in contention for one, like he has been multiple times, had I not bumped into, when I was 18 years old in college in Texas, I ran into an 18-year-old Owen Wilson in the hallway. And it says, if I had not bumped into Owen Wilson that day, I would have never been a filmmaker. Never would have done nothing.
Wow. That was the moment that...
That was it. It was like, wow, wow.
Sent him on a new trajectory.
Yeah. Wow. He says, wow. I don't know. I mean, I need to know more about that story. I know that there's a lot. Those guys all have a lot of connected tissue. Been in just about every movie he's made. And I know there's a lot there. But I didn't know that there was some moment in the hallway where it was like, I've met you now. For now on, I will be Wes Anderson. But my joke is he wasn't going to be there because the stage wasn't symmetrical enough, you know. That's why I think Wes Anderson doesn't go to anything. If he skips on a restaurant, that's because shit isn't symmetrical enough or have the right perfect color scheme. That's just his deal.
Nobody sent him the color palette ahead of time.
No, I got to get that done. All right. It'd be great if Owen Wilson's nose was broken by Wes Anderson, but I don't think that's the case. That's a rumor. I'm going to start today, though. What else? Let's see. Best animated feature went to the Boy and the Heron, which is a Miyazaki joint. Everyone thought that Spider-Man was going to nail that, and I'm sure it was close, but it didn't. Best supporting actor went to Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. That was nice to see. And what else matters here that we care about? Actress, we talked about. Actor, we talked about. American Fiction got the best adapted screenplay, and then best supporting actress, Divine Joy Randolph from The Holdovers. I gotta watch that. And there you go. There's your winners, everyone. Congratulations if you had skin in the game. Also, yeah. I didn't know there was so much nudity in Poor Things. No one warned me. You didn't warn me about nudity, and you didn't warn me about burp bubbles, and you didn't warn me about chicken dogs or dog geese. Or cat goat. There's all these weird hybrid animals. You didn't tell me. You didn't warn me. So whatever.
I'm trying not to. They tend to stop warning you about nudity after you're like 15.
I mean, it was. How do I put this? I've seen a lot of Emma Stone movies. I didn't know I was going to see so much Emma Stone. That's all I'm saying.
And then they start warning you. Then people start warning you about nudity again once you turn like 75.
Yeah, then you start. Yeah, then you start getting told.
Because then they're like worried that you're going to be scandalized.
Yeah. But also, there's a lot more Bruce Banner nudity than I thought I was going to ever see in my life.
Ooh.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo. I got to see very low on Mark Ruffalo.
You got a glimpse of his Ruffalo.
Yeah, dude. Ugh. Anyway, that surprised me a little. Moving on. We got a question for Bobby about how popular scientists talk about sci-fi stuff.
Ooh.
And this was in the form. Oh, I didn't paste it in here. Why? Well, anyway, here was the gist of it. There's a little bit of a controversy going around. We talked about Dune a little bit.
Okay.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, a very public out there voice in science, right? He's one of those guys where you hear him talk all the time. Him, Brian Cox, and there's a guy with Japanese descent. I forget his name. Anyway, older guy.
Michio Kaku.
That guy. He's always going, the black hole
when it starts to open, that's his cadence. I love it. I love how he talks.
Not a fan of Michio Kaku.
Oh, really?
No.
Are you racist or what's the problem? Oh, that's not it. Okay, it's something else. What is
that's
it?
Not it. He kind of went off the deep end a while back, and he's just, it feels like it's just all like, well, you know, I guess we never could know if aliens have visited Earth, you know, or like, I guess, you know, maybe it has happened that we could have, you know, travel back through time. It's just, he's always like skirting the lines of like, let me see if I can get you to pay attention by talking about things that are implausible by science.
Okay, so now that's an interesting point, because it seems like to get everyday folks' attention, who otherwise might not be paying attention to, I don't know, issues like climate change, or maybe things like how space works and what we're about to learn from certain things. You know, like the education around here is pretty bad on that front, and it can be seen as boring by a lot of people, especially young people. The idea that these guys get out on, you know, they're all over TikTok and shorts and everywhere else, Instagram, at least talking about these things, are you glad that that is a thing, or do you wish that they would die? Because obviously they have to say things that grab people, right? And part of what them doing that, which is the whole thing I'm going to bring up here with Neil deGrasse Tyson in a second, is that he said something provocative so that people suddenly are paying attention, and now it's controversial, but at least they listened to the overall thing, which had a point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you feel about that as somebody who does a podcast about science, who follows a ton of science content? Like, is it worth that? Or do you think it's that's important, selling our souls?
You do need to get people's attention, because a lot of times people wouldn't seek out this type of information unless they're already the type of, so like science communication, one of the things that we think about is how can we get people interested who otherwise would not, like, we want to teach people about science and get people interested and help people understand that science is really fascinating and it touches everything,
right?
But a lot of people already have these preconceived notions about science and like, it's not for me, or but we really believe that it's for everyone, right?
Yeah,
there's such a wide, vast thing that there's science out there for everybody, and the world is just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So you do kind of have to get people's attention sometimes, but science communication is difficult, and a lot of people think that they can just do it. I'm not tooting my own horn here saying that I'm really good at it. I don't think I am great at it. But I'm careful about it. And I'm always trying to learn and pay attention to what's working and pay attention to what other people are doing and what we know about it. And there's science that's done about science communication. And so all this is a long way to get to the point of saying that there's known effects of poor science communication or poor communication in general. So like, an example is just, here's an example. There's an effect that's been studied and known that when you present somebody with like a science or fiction fact, right?
Yeah.
Or you present something by pointing out a myth. It's often the case that if you present the myth and then you debunk it afterward, like that it's very likely that people are just going to remember the myth. They're not going to remember the actual fact after. So you have to be careful about how you do these things. People tend to only read headlines. So if you present some misinformation in a headline, and you're not careful about that, then that might be what people take home, because they've never gone and dug in and really critically analyzed the body of the text that you wrote.
Right. So when Michio Bukaki, or what's his name?
Michio Kaku. Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why that came out that way. But anyway, when he gets up and says the thing, sometimes it will be things like, many people think, I'm just going to do his voice. Many people think that a black hole just sucks in all the stuff around it. Well, that may not be the case. And then he goes into a thing.
Yeah.
Are you saying that people are going to more remember the myth about black holes than they are the corrective thing he's there to say? Or what do you mean? Because it seems like you kind of do have to point out the misconception sometimes, not always, but sometimes in order to educate about what's actually happening.
Yeah, but there are better ways to do it. So yeah, in general, yes. Now, it does. Not everybody is susceptible to this, of course. There are individual differences. But when you're talking about informing and communicating science to the masses, to the general public, yeah, if you start by saying, it's commonly thought that, black hole, like, well, you continue with your example. If we say it's commonly thought that black holes will just suck in everything around them and just eat anything. And eventually black holes are just going to suck in and eat everything in the whole universe. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, well, that's not true. And this is what really blah, blah, blah. People will often, because it's more salient, the first thing you said, they will just remember that.
Right.
There's different ways to go about it, which is to, like, one popular, or not popular necessarily, but one known way that is better to address misinformation is to get people to think about a question first. So ask somebody, how do you think black holes work?
Yeah.
Or do you think that black holes, if a sun or a star is near a black hole, do you think it necessarily will always, suck it up and eat it?
Yeah.
Get them to think about it and then engage their thing. And then while they're thinking about it and trying to come up with an answer on their own, get them to engage and ask them questions and get them to think critically about an answer. Now, you can't always have a back and forth, but if you can present it in a way that will get people to think about it and engage critically, that works a lot better.
Yeah, you're describing what would work really well in like a classroom situation and or some sort of, lecture, public lecture or something, yeah. Whereas it's more, I can see the challenge in today's world trying to communicate, especially with younger people, to communicate in 30-second bites all the time and only having them be kind of one way, but with a chaotic chat room and or comment thread. Like that's tricky, So I'm just always kind of in this mindset of like, which way would I rather have it? None at all, or at least them trying. And I do land on the, I prefer they try. But then what happens is these guys become kind of internet stars, TV stars in their own right. And then I start worrying about motivations. Like, why is it that, like, I believe him. I believe Neil deGrasse Tyson when he says, I want to be an educator. It's my job in this world.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. It's what I want to do. It's what I do best. That's what I'm going to do. And I believe him. I believe that that's true. But it also seems like he is booking every possible talk show, every possible giant podcast, every possible thing in order to do it. And it's hard for my brain to go, all right, well, that's all. It's purely in the face of education. Or is there something, it's just hard. I get skeptical. I don't know. Anyway, I should probably bring out the whole point of why I brought this up.
Yeah, what did he say?
So here's what he did. This Dune 2 talk's been going on a bunch, and he was out on somewhere and said the sandworm attractors, the thumpers, would never work.
Okay.
And so he went into this big, long description about why, and it had to do with a whole bunch of things, the physics of sand, especially when there's a lot of it. The whole point of it is that it absorbs sound and all this stuff. And he said it just would not be this thing that would attract these gigantic worms and blah blah blah. So he did this whole thing, and then people went after him because they're like, oh, but a space religion where the women can use a voice and have people do what they say, like that's all cool, or this mythical spice that makes intergalactic travel possible, that's fine. You're gonna focus on the thumper. Like, in that case, that feels like we're being weird, because his point is to say, here's a popular thing. Everyone's talking about it. Great opportunity to swoop in and do a little science. And it may seem a little antagonistic to nerds, but to be able to jump in and go, well, the thumper thing wouldn't really work, and here's why. I don't know that we should be going after a guy for that.
Well, so what? It's not a comment that's made in a bubble. you know, like Neil deGrasse Tyson. I wish I would have said what I was going to say as soon as you mentioned his name. I was going to say, did Neil deGrasse Tyson push up his glasses and correct everybody about something?
He is that guy, right? That is that guy.
Because that's what he does. That's his approach, it feels like. I have ambivalent feelings about him. I think he's a... I've heard him in lots of interviews. I've heard him talk. I think he's a great guy, and I think he has a really good goals, and he's not... he's not bad at what he does, but he does rub people the wrong way because he's always like well actualing his if that's his approach, it feels like, you know.
Yeah.
And you could say the same thing without being like, well, actually that would never work. You could just say, oh, you, what I always like to do, my approach is always, let me start with this, the tone of, oh, here's something really interesting.
Yeah.
That's always how I want to approach everything is, oh, did you know? Or, oh, this is really interesting. You know, and you can still say the same thing about the movie. But if when you start with that, I feel like it draws people in more and it makes me just get the excitement across better rather than the, I know something you don't, you know?
Well, the good news is then I think we're talking about Brian Cox. That's how he does it. He's very good at that. Someone will say something controversial, whether it's to get him to talk about religion or whether it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he's very good at saying, like, if they're asking him directly, what do you believe in God? He'll give his answer and say, well, I don't, but here's why we do that. Or
Brian Cox is a huge inspiration for me.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I think he does an amazing job at making everyone feel good.
Yeah.
And that you can disagree with him and it's okay.
Yeah.
It's
fine.
Right.
He's not judging you. You don't feel judged by that guy. Yeah. You feel like a really raw sense of here's someone who loves science, like truly.
Yeah.
That dude is into it. He also seems like he doesn't come in with any kind of, the word is an agenda. He doesn't have an attitude. His attitude is like, ooh, you want to talk about that? Oh, this is so exciting. Let's talk about what we know.
Exactly.
And what the theory was versus what we know now. And like, he really gets like, it's addicting and he's very good. I wish there were more of him, I guess is the answer. So there you go. And don't worry about Sandworm shit. It's a freaking science fiction novel. It's not meant to be based on reality. And half the fun is ideas like, I can use this thumper to attract a freaking giant worm. Okay, it's fine.
Right.
Also, somebody else pointed out that the thumpers in the new movies are about this big. You know, they extend to about that, but then schlunk, schlunk. They're just little things. They look like a garden tool or something. In the old movie, he's carrying a freaking Paul Atreides is carrying this thing on his back. It's like a big old freaking thing of this long.
Yeah.
You just got to really cram in there. And I don't know if one's more likely to attract the worm than the other, but... Also, the worms talk to each other and talk to people sometimes, and there's some kind of blue liquid that if it doesn't kill you, it makes you really, really omnipotent. Like, I understand why people go after him when he does this stuff. I just think that maybe he's off-putting for the reasons you said, which is he seems like the I know everything in the room, and whatever you say, he'll do it, but actually. And that can be annoying.
Yeah. He comes from a good place. Like, he's trying.
Of course he does.
I say I'm talking down to him. He is a very successful science communicator.
Oh, yeah. No, maybe the biggest, maybe the most successful science communicator of all
so
time.
So he's doing something right. But I understand why people are put off by his approach.
Yeah, it's all about approach. But now every time I hear Hiaki Mokimoto, what's his name?
Yeah, Michio Kaku.
Michio?
Yeah.
Okay. Michio Kaku. Kako? Kaku?
Kaku. Yeah.
I'm really sorry for butchering this, him and any other Japanese names today. I've been watching Shogun. You'd think I'd be in the mood for like proper pronunciation of Japanese names, but
right,
can't get it done. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back from this music break, we're going to do some more science. Yeah, that's right. It's Science Monday.
Today's Science Day.
Yeah, get used to it. But we're going to take a song break. And for this song break, Brian thankfully sent me some stuff. I'm really glad he was able to take time for that. So thank you, Brian, for sending me this. This is a song called Tyrannical Rex. And this is from Mark Valentine, a brand new album coming out called Basement Sparks. I love that name. That comes out on the 22nd. This is a new single from that album called Tyrannical Rex.
And I don't know. Let's see. New king of British pop, power pop, says Vive La Rock. Also, PM, RP Monday, or sorry, RP Munline. I don't know. Oh. Such an idiot. RPM Online.
Like, that's a real Greg for Walkman situation.
Right, oh, there. Big time. I just saw RP and then the M's the final capital letter and then online. And to me, that meant that's the next word. Jeez Louises. Anyway, this is a new thing. Let's see. He is a Mark Valentine charismatic singer-songwriter. Crowned the new king of British power pop, is set to bring his energetic live show to the United States for the very first time in March. It's going to start with this one. He's going to travel with the Buzzcocks, do some other cool stuff. So watch for that. In the meantime, you get to hear this song here, maybe for the first time, a lot of you. This is from Basement Sparks. This is his single. I lost it. Where'd it go? This is his single. How did Brian do this with these emails? Holy crap. Tyrannical Rex. That's WRECKS, like, you know, you wrecked your car, not like REX. It's important to point that out, I think. Or this is the dumbest idea I've ever had. Anyway, I'm going to play this song now, but we'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned. You guys want some meat? I have the meats. I do. And that's thanks to Good Chop. Look, how do you get your fresh cut meat? Do you go down to some butcher and spend a bunch of time, drive forever, hope it's fresh, you know, hope the price isn't up, that kind of stuff? Do you do that? Well, I don't. I get it from Good Chop. Good Chop's amazing. We like to make sure we're eating well and having enough energy to do everything we need to do. Good Chop is our solution. It offers fully customized boxes of high quality meat and seafood with no antibiotics or added hormones. delivered straight to your door on your schedule. Go to goodchop.com/morningstream120 and use the code morningstream120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. All right, do that. I had some amazing chicken the other day. The beef just about put me in heaven. It was amazing. The marbling was just right. USDA prime stuff. All right. I don't have to go to the grocery store to get that either. And I don't have to worry about, I don't know, how weird that stuff's treated at a grocery store, how long it's been there. Sometimes those dates are wrong. You know, it's just a little bit weird. But that's one way the Good Chop can benefit you guys directly. Fresh every time and amazing every time. The products are vacuum sealed and frozen at peak freshness so you can stock your freezer and cook them when you want to. And they're so confident in the quality of their cuts, they'll offer 100% back your money. All right? 100% money back guarantee. Love Good Chop or you'll get it all back. So go to goodchop.com/morningstream120. Use the code morningstream120 and get $120 off across your first four boxes. That's code 120 at the end of Morning Stream. All right? Lowercase Morning Stream 120. That's the full code. At goodchop.com/morningstream120 for $120 off.
I've got a pizza on the way.
There's no pizza on the way. I stopped by and talked with Andy at the pizza place and told him that till you pay your tab in full, they're not to deliver a single pizza to you. Capiche?
You bastard.
And we've returned once again. That was the new album Basement Sparks and the single Tyrannical Rex, all from Mark Valentine, available March 22nd. Watch for it. Thank you again, Brian, for making that a thing I could do today. All right, Bobby. This is a weird way all to do this, but I'm just going to play it.
Science!
Bob is hungry, and the soup looks good.
It's as if you just called in on Discord.
Hey, welcome to me.
Welcome to you. So speaking of science, we were a little science heavy on our last segment, but let's do more. What'd you bring today?
I want to talk about bees.
Oh my gosh, bees. All right.
Bees! Yeah.
Millions of bees.
This is apropos of absolutely nothing, but I used to live in a house that was, there was a railroad tracks right in front of the house. Like, yeah. There was our front yard. It was maybe 30 feet out, and then there were railroad tracks.
This is growing up, like as a kid or something?
It was after college. Mm. After we graduated, we rented this house for 2 years.
Gotcha.
And there were trains that would go by that we would call bee trains, because it would like make this sound that was just like for some reason it just buzzed, and I don't know, that's just, I just thought about that for some reason.
Sure.
Humans, we think that we are very special, don't we?
Yeah, I think we think we're the specialist, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. We're always thinking about how we have these superpowers that separate us from other animals in the world, you know? Like how we can think better and we can use tools and we have cultural knowledge and all these kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as time goes on, we do more and more research over the decades that shows that we are not alone in these special abilities that we think we have. There are lots of other animals in the world that have similar abilities, like
the monkeys. Like, they're right up there, right? Well,
yeah.
Okay.
That was one of the first ones that we found out that had tool use, right?
Yeah. They can carve out stuff and dig at things and kind of make a fork if they need to, right?
Right. Yeah. We thought we were unique as humans. That's what separated us. Like, one of the big things that separated us from the animal world, from the wild animals, was that we could use tools and nobody else could. But then we found apes could, crows can, lots of corvids can use tools, dolphins have demonstrated tool use. There's things like language. We thought, oh, we're the only ones with language. Then we have found that birds show pretty complicated language ability that some people still debate, is that really language?
Yeah.
But it's pretty, regardless, it's pretty complex, and many people think that you could call it language. Even dialects of different animals, like birds and whales, have like local dialects and everything.
Do they have like, do they have accents depending? Like if you're a dolphin in the, I don't know, the Atlantic, and you go down south, and there's kind of a drawl to the southern dolphins.
Yeah. So they're going, eight, eight, eight.
I mean, I don't know. Like, if they are communicating, it makes sense to me that if you were talking a couple of weeks ago, I think you were, or no, this wasn't while you were here, but we had a story about how everybody up in the Arctic, when they're there long enough, they start to develop their own unique accent because people from around the world are up there, different scientists, different people. And by the time that time's up, especially if they've all sort of been together for 90 days or more, they all kind of have their own little twang and their own little weird thing,
yep.
Which makes sense. That's how this happens, right? So why not animals? Why not?
Yeah, exactly. And birds have shown that a lot, but I've heard of different ones. And then, constantly when we learn these new things, what you see is that even in the science world, you see that we then just move the goalposts, right? We say, oh, well, okay, animals can use tools, but they don't have cultural learning, or they don't have, you know, whatever. And so we just keep moving the goalposts, saying, like, we're still special, and here's why.
Well, I mean, it's hard to, from a practical standpoint, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's hard to look at, say, you know, an ape found a branch and went, well, if I use the sharp end of this, I can actually dig these ants out better and eat them. Okay.
Yeah.
Tool use. Awesome. It's rad. Then you flip over to me and I'm, you know, let's say Ibbit's 3D printing a Galactus model. I'm over here using a computer to generate a digital 30x40 print that will eventually get printed out, put into a frame and put up on a wall. These seem like more complex tools or uses of tools. Right. And obviously they're iterative tools, right? I don't, you know, the mouse didn't appear. The computer mouse didn't just pop into view one day and we all went, ooh, I wonder what this does. This is, you know, hundreds of years of research and various things. And it all adds up to me being able to spend $25 and use the tool.
Right.
But as a collective human tool, that seems more advanced. This mouse right here seems a lot more advanced than that freaking stick.
Right. And so the technology is a really good example for where I'm getting with this. And it's coming back to bees eventually, I promise.
Oh, it's always bees. Everything comes back to bees. Yeah. It's fine.
But it's the reason that's a good example is because the most recent, I think, place that the goalpost has been moved to, it has to do with cultural learning. And so a lot of people believe, okay, animals can do all these things. They can use tools and language and everything. But one thing that separates us from animals is the ability to have social cultural learning. And culture, by the way, I mean, cultural learning is just the idea that we can learn something and then we can pass on that knowledge to future generations and people around us, right? So that they can then add more to that knowledge and it accumulates over time, right?
Yeah, that is definitely seems like a human thing. Whereas like, obviously, we don't have enough time to say this, but let's say maybe in 1,000 years it's different. But right now, nobody's going, oh, that marks the first time that monkey used a stick. Probably not. They've been doing this for a while. Right?
Right. And so like the reason I say technology is a good example is because that mouse or the iPhone that you have in your pocket is there's no way one person is making all the breakthroughs and learning all the things just by themselves to make that thing. It's the result of generation upon generation upon generation of cultural collective knowledge. Right. So we thought this is what sets us apart, but turns out maybe bees can do that too.
Oh wow.
So
tell me more.
So there's some research that was done led by a team led by Alice Bridges from Queen Mary University of London. And what they did was they wanted to demonstrate from colony animals, bees, to see what are the limits of their social ability, right? They're very social insects. Mm-hmm. They're social animals. And so what are some of the limits of that? And can they pass on knowledge to each other? and then therefore pass them through generations, right?
Right.
So what they did was they created a puzzle. It was a complex puzzle, and they gave it to the bees. They were bumblebees that they were giving it to. And the puzzle had two steps. It's basically this like platform that they could sit on that's made of plastic. And on one part of the platform, clear plastic platform they're standing on, and underneath it, at one point in the floor, is this yellow spot that has sugar water droplets in it. And bees love sugar water.
They're big, big fans, dude. They'll drink that all day if you let them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and yellow is a good attractive color for bees. So, and these bees, these colony bees, they were trained to see the yellow and know that there's sugar water on these yellow spots, right? But it's trapped. It's underneath this clear plastic thing. And so they devised this puzzle where the bees could push a little red plastic tab with a track. It's like got a track on it. It's a very visual tool. So without explaining it to great detail, just know that there was a red tab that they could push on to rotate this disc and open up and expose the yellow spot with the sugar on it. They could do that.
Okay.
But they could not do that unless they first pushed a blue tab, which was blocking the motion of the red tab. So it's a complex thing. They had to know to push a blue tab to unlock the ability to push the red tab. And the reason that that's complex for bees is because you can teach a bee to do things. We've done this before. We teach bees to – there's a 2017 study that where bees would learn how to roll a small – ball into a goal to get a reward. But the thing is, you can teach animals of all types to do things when there's a reward involved. But pushing the blue tab first in order to be able to push another tab, the pushing of the blue tab does not involve a reward. So
right, because the reward is knowing down the road, like if I okay, it's like this: if a human knows they won something, they have to go pick it up. They want to. Yeah. They want a prize. It's a cash prize. It's $5,000, but they have to go down to the radio station and pick it up.
Right.
They know where the reward is, and that means a few things. I have to leave the house. I have to lock the door. I have to drive this car. It has to have gas in it already. If it doesn't, or isn't running, or a tire is flat, that's a problem. They have to have all of that worked out. And still keep in mind the ultimate prize, which is I'm picking up my $5,000. You're saying bees have the ability to multi-level their quest.
Yeah. So it's even more than that. It's first thing that the researchers did is they put this puzzle into a hive and they left it there for a number of hours. They did different amounts for different hives, but they were either 36 or 72 hours over 12 to 24 days, and they would put the puzzle there. And none of the bees could figure it out. Just nothing. Like, there's no way they could figure out how to do it on their own. The reason this is important is because I mentioned in 2017 they did a study where bees could learn how to push a ball into a goal to get a reward. They figured that out on their own. You can see how you could accidentally figure that out. Push a ball around and, when we push it over here, something great happens. This puzzle with the different colored tabs and multi-step process, none of them could figure it out. But then what they did is they would take some individual bees and they would train those bees to perform the steps. So yes, like you were saying, first thing we learned was you can actually teach these bees by successively providing rewards for each step of the way. And they could eventually learn to perform all the steps in order to get the reward.
Right. But you had to give them a mini reward every step, right?
Yeah. And that's normal.
Sure.
Like that's how you teach things, right? You have to do that.
I think even people, it's like even that trip to this thing to get my money, there's a reward in knowing that if I go into this car and take the proper route, that's a reward of knowing I did a thing that will get me closer. I guess that makes sense. We all do that.
Right. So what they did, they could train these bees, and they would call these bees that they trained, the individual bees, demonstrator bees, because then they would put those bees back into the colony and then put the puzzle back into the colony or the hive or whatever you call it. And as long as the puzzle was present in a colony with a demonstrator bee, then the bees would learn how to do it. the bees that knew how to do it were showing the other bees how to do it. Even more so than that, not only were the bees observing another bee do it and get a reward, so they were learning that way, but the scientists were able to also observe that the demonstrator bees would teach the other bees by giving them rewards to help them learn the steps. Right? So they would like see, oh, first you have to push this blue tab. Here, let me give you a little bit of a reward of nectar or something to say, like, good job pushing that blue tab. These are the bees doing it, right?
Yeah.
And so they were able to, so that demonstrated that not only can they culturally pass on knowledge by just observing other bees doing something, but they can deliberately teach each other how to do something.
Interesting.
It's not a trivial finding, because
that sounds like the bee equivalent of cultural learning a little bit.
It is cultural learning, because it is something that these colonies could not figure out how to do on their own.
Interesting.
They had to be taught, and they could teach each other. So, I mean, bees have a brain the size of a grain of rice, Scott. Like,
yeah. Little tiny thing. Yeah.
And I think the reason that one of the reasons this is so significant is because it doesn't feel like, if you tell somebody, oh, apes and gorillas, they can culturally teach each other things, it doesn't feel like that much of a stretch. We're like, oh, okay, but we're still special because they're like really close to us on the evolutionary tree, right?
Right.
But bees are pretty far away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like you can look at an ape and go, you're taking care of your baby like I did, and you're sort of, I don't know, doing other things that remind me of what a human might do.
Yeah.
Bees ain't doing anything that looks familiar. Right? I don't look at a bee and go, oh, that bee suddenly exhibiting some human behavior. It's not happening. But right. Turns right. out maybe in a roundabout way they are.
So we're not quite as unique even in this cultural learning thing as we thought. But I think it makes sense to me that this is something that other animals would be able to do, because even evolutionarily, it's a way to speed. Like, if you are an animal, a social animal that is able to pass on knowledge culturally, it's a way to sort of like circumvent evolution in a way. Like, no. Not really circumvent it, but like speed up the process. Evolution happens really slowly. This is faster.
Yeah, it's quick, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I have a quote from the person who ran that study. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Here it is.
I don't like bees.
I'm a little surprised yeah. They don't like bees, given their study of bees. You know,
maybe they were trying to. They set out to show that bees are stupid, and they couldn't.
Yeah, that might be it. Also, it's interesting because, you know, humans do think pretty highly of themselves in terms of our place in the world.
Yeah.
But that in itself is a unique trait. And also it's kind of true.
The ability to be able to think that highly of yourself.
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, kind of what I'm getting at. But also evidentially, it does seem accurate that we are in a place right now of dominance. Like we could, and by dominance, right. I mean, we have the power to either make the planet sort of flourish, or we have the power to kind of destroy it. If we really wanted to, let's say everybody was cool with this. It wouldn't be good for our evolutionary survival instincts, but let's say we were all just totally cool with the idea of just nuking the whole thing all at once. Let's go. Everyone hit the red button at the same time. And we did that because we just kind of wanted to see what would happen. We have that power. No other creature that I'm aware of. Like, I don't even know. I don't know if enough monkeys could get together in a room and go, listen, I have an idea.
Yeah.
If everyone throws their shit at the same time, we're going to have a major disease problem in this world. You know, like, they don't think that way, collectively or individually, but we can. And because we can, doesn't that mean that the notion that we truly are top of the chain is probably true because we can conceive it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think if you look around, you certainly can see lots of evidence that there is something different about humans, right?
Right, right.
We are the only ones making giant cities. We are the only ones that seem to be, pumping carbon into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're realizing is it's not, there's not this one thing. It's, we're getting closer and closer to I think understanding that it's not just like one little thing that sets us apart. It's probably that we share a lot of traits in common with a lot of different animals, and our, what sets us apart is our ability to kind of like weave them all together, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that's true. So it's also heard a thing from Neil deGrasse Tyson once where he said that we only are 1% difference in our DNA to that of a gorilla or most apes or something. And yep. He says if we are that different from them by only 1%, but we are this much further down the road in terms of cognitive behavior, blah, blah, blah. Like all of our, everything we do as humans that apes can't do. If that's just 1%, imagine what a being with 1% more. Wait, how does that work? That we are the 99% of, but they have the extra percent over on us. Sure, what that looks like.
Yeah.
It's a pretty thought-provoking idea, because I don't think apes have any idea what's going on. In other words, you don't, no ape is going to walk up to you and go, you know, I'm fully aware of how the stock market works, and this dispute that has escalated so terribly in the Middle East, I'm aware of that. They don't know. They have no idea. Yeah. Any more than a fish knows. If you take a fish and throw it in the desert, it's not going to know what the F is going on. It doesn't know. Whoa, what is this? Like, will we ever be thrown into something where we don't, where we're at that level of not knowing what the next percent DNA guys know?
That's
fascinating to me.
The AIs are going to do that too.
Maybe that's how we get there. But it's always been fascinating to me because in theory, we don't have any concept of it in the same way that a monkey or an ape has no concept of our 1% difference. Yeah. They don't know. They don't know that I know. Let me find something here. I don't know. They don't. What's a good example? Everything's an example.
Like, you're surrounded by examples.
Yeah, they don't know what this is. This controller here, they don't know. I don't know what this is for. I could give it to them. We might be able to train them to do some simple stuff with it, but they don't go, oh, well, that's a Sony PlayStation 5 controller. It's also called the DualSense, and this is a long line of controllers from Sony since the 90s. They don't know any of those things. So what being is there where we are like the ape to them? That's interesting science fiction for me. That's a book I want to read, and there are probably books all about this that I don't know about.
Yeah, I think so.
Like the worms on Arrakis. They're smart. We just didn't really know it yet. They got all kinds of shit to do with the evolution of humans. We just didn't know it. So that's some fun fiction. Give me more of that. All comes back to Dune this month. Just wait till May. I'll shut up about it. But right now, it's all Dune all the time.
I want to be one of those Mentats.
You want to be a Mentat? All right. I want to be a Spicer Guild looking dude, because they only show them briefly in the first movie. And they got crazy helmets. And I just want to know what's inside of them, those suits. Because when they brought the thing to Leto Atreides to sign and do his ring and say, I'm going with you to run Arrakis, they were just kind of there. And I want to know more about them. And they're in the books and there's more to know. But I'm just saying from a visual standpoint,
yeah,
what's in those suits? Gosh dang it, those movies are good. Oh,
I love it so much.
All right, enough of that. Let's move on. Thank you for the bee talk. It's good stuff, this bee stuff that we did today.
You're welcome.
We got a quick final thing before we get out of here. Monica, a.k.a. Wicked Kitten. I think she's in the chat today. Did I see her earlier?
She sure is.
She sent us a message that says, hey, this is for TMS. I'm a little behind, and I wanted to share something about the Coke Zero versus diet that I learned firsthand. Some people are just so used to and comforted by the flavor of diet, like Diet Coke, that they actually prefer it and will die on that hill. In the beginning, when Zero drifted into our lives like a bubbly nectar of the gods, it was decreed that some would be left behind. Those lost souls are warriors of a forgotten, bad-tasting time, says Monica / Wicked Kitten. No, I understand. I know people in my personal life who will fight to the death for Diet Coke versus Coke Zero. And they're wrong.
I prefer Diet Coke.
Oh, Bobby, yeah. We can't be friends anymore.
I know. I'm taking a risk. I prefer it, but I won't die on that hill. Jesus.
You don't want to die on that hill. There are a lot of hills I'll die on. That ain't one of them for sure.
Yeah, that is not a good hill to die on. I don't know. I like it's crispier to me. Like it has a crispier flavor. I think I don't like really sugary drinks either. Mm. So
yeah.
So Coke Zero, like the whole point of Coke Zero is to have fewer calories but the same great taste, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to it's supposed to give you no calories but be as close to the as Coke tastes as they can.
Yeah, but I never really liked how sugary those tasted to begin with.
Right.
So it just gives a syrupy feeling in my mouth. So it really has less to do with the flavor and more to do with I just never really liked it to begin with. So
I get it.
I sometimes like fruit juices are even too sweet for me or I don't know.
They are very sweet. Natural sugar and like a big glass of orange juice. That thing is chock full of sugar, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You should know that going in.
Crystal Light, Grown Up Kool-Aid.
Oh yeah, Grown Up Kool-Aid, Crystal Light. Also has caffeine
in it.
I water that down.
We water that down more than what it says to make it.
Those are caffeinated, right? Aren't those a kind of energy shot?
If you get the tea ones, they do have caffeine in them.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're made with a real black tea, but you can get the caffeine. They have caffeine-free ones.
Those things Brian and I were doing, I forgot the names of them, the little shots. They're very good, and they wake you right up, but I think it's because there's so much caffeine in those things per square inch that it just jolts your body. Tom Norm in the chat says, in my experience, it's my experience that people will die on any hill, no matter how wrong or stupid. Hey, Tom Norm, are you willing to die on that hill? See, this is how my brain thinks. We all have hills we'll die on. That's his.
Hills upon hills.
Hills upon hills. Some people's hills to die on are the hill that says everyone else is stupid about their hills. Right? But we're probably wrong. Probably more complex than that. It's probably more, there's probably more to it than just everybody's dying on a hill that's stupid, you know? We've all got our hills. You know what the hill I die on? Here's the hill I die on. My kids and my wife and family, if they're in trouble, I'll die on that hill.
If they're piled in on top of each other into a hill, you'll die on
that hill. I'll die on that hill, trying to protect them as the hill. Because that's what you're fighting for, right? The idea here, the metaphor is, if you're dying on a hill, that hill is, you know, I don't know, like a famous war, you're all fighting for such and such hill. What was the one in the movie? Like Fried Chicken Hill or something? Or Cheeseburger Hill? What was that called? Whatever it is. Cheese.
I'm at a loss.
It's something like there's a movie. There's a movie about a hill that you die on in a war. Hamburger Hill. That's it. That's an actual thing. I don't remember what war. Was it that might have been Vietnam. But anyway, the point is you're holding your ground. You're fighting for what's under you. Well, I don't have too many things like that. I don't think. Like my kids. I'd die on their hill.
Don Cheadle was in Hamburger Hill.
He was very good in Hamburger. Hamburger Hill's a good movie. It's all right. If you can deal with like war, you know, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again. Or what's the use of war in the case of Fallout is war never changes. And are you looking forward to that show? Have you seen the trailer for that? What do you think of that?
Oh my gosh. I love what's his name? I'm bad with names too today.
Walton Goggins is who you're thinking of.
Yes, I love Walton Goggins. So I am very excited about that show. And I love Fallout.
Yeah.
So
what? What else can you ask for, right? And everyone else looks like they're great in it. And they got the right sense of humor. By the way, I find out that robot in the trailer that's trying to, whatever it said, take out your organs or whatever it said. Mm-hmm. That thing's voiced by Matt Berry. That's cool.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons to get excited about Fargo. And we got like a month or something. And they're dropping all the episodes the same day. I'm so excited.
I'm also excited about. Please start doing that again. That used to be what you did, and then they stopped.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing it again.
Yeah, thank you for doing it again, guys. We appreciate it. That is going to do it for today's show. If you want to be like Monica and send us a message, that was at our text line, 801-471-0462. Or you can email us, as usual, at themorningstream@gmail.com. For everything else, you'll find it at frogpants.com/TMS. And before we leave, I would be remiss if I didn't tell people about Bobby's fantastic podcast, All Around Science. Bobby, tell me more and where they can get it.
My fantastic podcast is called All Around Science. We talk about science every week, me and my co-host Maura, and you just look for All Around Science. This past, the episode that just released today, actually, is all about AI, and we talked about AI and whether or not it's... it has like social intelligence, and Maura and I had a good debate about that. We had slightly different opinions, and so just this whole idea that AI is whether it's, if it does anything, if it's doing anything special, and whether it's actually intelligent or not.
Yeah.
Is an interesting conversation to have, and we try to have it, or we did have it. But we talk about all sorts of things in science all the time, and that's just what we talked about this week.
Nice. So,
All Around Science.
All Around Science, you guys. Go check it out if you like scientific content or you enjoy what we talked about today. You might find some more right in there. Chat room, I did say Fargo. I did not mean Fargo. I meant Fallout. All right? They're the two F words in my life. You got the wrong one. okay. That's it. We're out of here. I'm going to play a song. And once again, Brian, stepping up to the plate, giving me something in advance. Appreciate that very much. This is a request. And this is from yet another Brian. This is Kike Bush. Kike Bush? I don't know if I'm saying that right. Kike Bush? I don't think Kike Bush is right.
Play it safe and say Kike.
I'm going to say Kike Bush. yeah, that's a good idea. Anyway, he sent this over on the 6th or so. He said... he wants to, well, here's his message. March 6th, we should all celebrate my 200th season. This is a Metallica reference on this little blue third stone from the sun. I have a playlist on my Spotify that is nothing but heavy covers. Sympathy for the Devil by Motorhead. Give Me One Reason or Don't Bring Me Down by the Blackstone Cherries. White Room by Apocalyptica. Ooh, I like them. Diamonds by Any Given Day. Blinding Light by Saint Asonia. Asonia, I believe is correct. Radioactive by Bullet for my Valentine. Kiss from a Rose by Kaylee King. I could go on, but I digress. Wants to hear Helden or Heroes, originally by David Bowie, by Apocalyptica. That's what we're going to play. All right? Are you ready for this Helden song? I've never heard this, so this will be new to me. Maybe across the board. Well, I know Heroes, though. We could be heroes. So I don't know what the Helden part is. Anyway, we're going to play that now. And tomorrow, Brian will be back. We'll be back with a brand new episode of a Tuesday edition of the show. We all have a fantastic day. Bobby, thanks again for hanging out with me today.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Ich bin dein König. Get more at frogpants.com.
To eat things that'll make a billy goat puke.
Ew.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.